Orville Freestone Jr., Sunday PM, December 12, 2010.
Turn in your Bibles to the first chapter of Romans, and we will begin with verse 18. And, to quote our pastor, this is one chapter I'd like to skip over. But we aren't given that option because it's one of the most important lessons of the gospel. It is the very basic lesson of the gospel. And we might title this whole section labeled condemnation in the outline as, or at least this section of it, as sin's downward path. And it is thankfully our King James translators use quite a few euphemisms in translating this passage, for the Greek text is very much more graphic. But let's read it through. For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who hold the truth in unrighteousness, because that which may be known of God is manifest in them, for God hath showed it unto them. For the invisible things of him from the creation of the world are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even his eternal power and Godhead, so that they are without excuse, because that which they knew, that when they knew God, they glorified him not as God, neither were thankful, but became vain in their imaginations, and their foolish heart was darkened. Professing themselves to be wise, they became fools, and changed the glory of the incorruptible God into an image made like unto corruptible man, and to birds, and four-footed beasts, and to creeping things. Wherefore God also gave them up to uncleanness through the lusts of their own hearts, to dishonor their own bodies between themselves, who changed the truth of God into a lie, and worshipped and served the creature rather than the Creator, who is blessed forever. Amen. For this cause God gave them up to vile affections, for even their women did change the natural use into that which is against nature, and likewise also the men, leaving the natural use of the woman, burned in their own lusts toward one another, men with men working that which is unseemly, and receiving in themselves that recompense of their error which was meet. And even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, God gave them over to a reprobate mind, to do those things which are not convenient, being filled with all unrighteousness, fornication, wickedness, covetousness, maliciousness, full of envy, murder, debate, deceit, malignity, whisperers, backbiters, haters of God, despiteful, proud, boasters, inventors of evil things, disobedient to parents, without understanding, covenant breakers, without natural affections, implacable, unmerciful, who, knowing the judgment of God, that they which commit such things are worthy of death, not only do the same, but have pleasure in them that do them. Sounds like the kind of neighbors you'd like to have, doesn't it? We do. In the 17th verse, Paul wrote, "For the righteousness of God is revealed from faith to faith, as it is written, the just shall live by faith." The righteousness of God is revealed by the Word of God. For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who hold the truth in unrighteousness. And by the heavens, he doesn't mean the starry sky, because that is one of the things that man debased. As they built the Tower of Babel, they built a tower to reach into the heavens, or as one other translation has it, they built a tower in whose top the heavens are, meaning the zodiac. So that is one of the reasons for the wrath of God. For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven, not in a visible way, but from heaven is the source of the revelation of the wrath of God. And it is, the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who hold the truth in unrighteousness. Because that which may be known of God is manifest in them. It's not manifest to them. It's manifest in them. The wrath of God is manifest in the natural man, in his conscience, in his apprehension, in his fear. All naturalistic religions, in fact, every religion excepting the faith of the gospel and the Mosaic faith and Abrahamic faith of the Old Testament, is based on fear. I used to become very aggravated by, when we lived in Gallup, by people who would all but curse the missionaries for going out into the reservation to disrupt these people in their natural religion. They want to preserve the natural religion of these people. They would like to make the reservation some sort of museum to the past rather than some way to the future. And even one of the neighbors that we had said, "Leave them alone. They're happy in their religion." That's the biggest lie they could have told, for it is not true. All natural religion is based on fear, including Islam. And there is a good deal of evidence on that too. One time when I was driving across the Navajo reservation, it was a rather long drive, and I saw a Navajo thumbing a ride. So I picked him up, and he was a likely chap, very friendly. And I had been reading some things about the Yebishe, the spirits in their religion. They can be malevolent or they can benevolent, but you never knew which. And they were always afraid of them. So as we drove along, the yay could be in any place. They could be in a clump of bushes. They could be in a hill, or most any place. You never knew where they would be. So as we drove along, there was a rocky area off to the right of the road. So I asked this fellow, he says, "Are the yay over there?" And immediately I could see fear in his eyes. And he turned away and he wouldn't answer me. And he was quiet for most of the rest of the drive. Their religion, like all heathen religion, is based on fear. And that fear was placed in them by God. The wrath of God is revealed from heaven in them. They know they're not right. They know there's something amiss. They are afraid. They are afraid even of the myths that they themselves have spun. For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who hold the truth in unrighteousness. All religions, excepting what is revealed in this book, know nothing about the love of God. Perhaps you heard about it on the news or read about it in the newspaper, but you've heard of the terrorist organization Hamas, have you not? Have all of you heard about Hamas? It is the belligerent, ruthless group, gang that runs Gaza. About 10 years ago, the son of the founder of Hamas was befriended by a Christian who gave him a copy of the New Testament to read. And he said, as he read further and further into the New Testament, he was amazed that it told of God's love for mankind. He says there is no love of God in Islam. And he became a believer. He went back to try to convince his father of his faith. And his father says, "I give you my blessing, but no, I will not go with you." But he did command all of the Hamas paramilitaries to give his son safe conduct out of the country. He lives in Los Angeles now. And he directs by long distance a mission in Palestine. There is no love in any faith outside the Bible. There is only fear. And now we will read why this is the way it is. The wrath of God, as Epictetus said, abides on mankind. O thou who abidest under the wrath of God and considerest it not. Because that which may be known of God is manifest in them. Not only is the wrath of God manifest in them, but that which may be known of God is manifest in them. For God has showed it unto them, for the invisible things of him from the creation of the world are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even his eternal power and Godhood, so that they are without excuse. Now, that which may be known of God is manifest in them, for God has shown it to him, for the invisible things of him. Now, these things are not tangibles. They are not kosas. They are not tangible things that we could hold or see or whatever it is. These things of God that is revealed to them are his eternal power and godhood, his goodness, his providence, his unity, all of the basic qualities of God, Paul says, are revealed to humankind. And even the philosophers knew this. We'll get to that in this next chapter. They deduced through their philosophies all of these basic attributes of God. But they came up short of the gospel because they were without faith. Because God does not send anyone to hell. They're already bound for hell, and he sent his son to redeem from hell. Because that which may be known of God is manifest in them, for God has shown it unto them, the invisible things of him from the creation of the world, are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even his eternal power and Godhead. So they are without excuse. There is no excuse. The invisible things of God, that is, the attributes of God, are revealed in the things that are made, the things that are formed, the things that we can see and we can handle. The majesty of God in the heavens. Who can deny that? The vast expanse of the universe that boggles the mind was changed into the zodiac. And all of the crazy myths along with it. The bountiful provision for life on this earth. Man has no excuse for famines. He has no excuse for starving millions. And they can't blame God for it, though they do. There is no excuse for poverty. There is no excuse for man's inhumanity to man, because everything needful for a full, happy, material life he has already provided in this world. So they were without excuse. And of all God's bountiful provision, Brother Crook, have you ever counted all of the seeds that these Siberian elms shed in a year's time? Have you ever swept them up and weighed them? God is very prodigal in everything. There are far more of those seeds than are necessary for the preservation of the Siberian elm. It's that way with everything. But have you ever heard of a bumper crop? They're planted with a few hands full of seed. Everything on earth shows us the providence of God. And we should say the caring nature for God and lead us to the love of God. But the natural man never makes the leap. But they are without excuse, the apostle says. Now, as we read through here and some of these things, I won't deal, mercifully will not deal with at great length, but there is an absolute chasm between biblical faith and evolutionary philosophy. We all of us know about evolutionary philosophy, how some tadpole wriggled up on the ground and instead of drying up and blowing away, he developed legs somehow. And how man certainly evolved first from some creature represented by a single jawbone in the Olduvai Gorge of East Africa. The National Geographic is dedicated to propagating that source of propaganda. The mankind rose from the animal kingdom and developed into humans, primitive humans, who, like the Neanderthals, were rather dull people, into the smart people that we are today. And we're still evolving, only it all goes on in here. If you believe that, you're more simple than I think you are. Paul here and the whole Bible elsewhere implies man did not evolve, he devolved. For we read here, when they knew God. Mankind once knew God and deliberately turned from God. And the only path was downward, degenerate. When they knew God, they glorified him not as God. But what about those dull Neanderthals? There are a minority of scientists that say they can account for the Neanderthals, and they're not any different species of hominid at all. They are human beings who lived in the north part of Europe during the Ice Age, when the sky was overclouded and stormy almost all the time. They did not get enough sunshine to get any vitamin D to prevent rickets. They only had animals to eat because they couldn't raise vegetables in that climate, and so they are deformed rather than differently evolved. Doesn't that make more sense than the other story? When they knew God, farther from that, the gospel in the Old Testament proclaims that when God made man, he made him perfect. And none of us is perfect today. perfect in the sense of being a fully complete human being with all faculties and everything. So everything has been on a downward path. Because when they knew God, they glorified him not as God. Do you see how intractable this chapter is with evolutionary theory? They glorified him not as God, neither were thankful. Did you ever think of thankfulness as being unthankfulness as being a gross sin? They were unthankful to God, and they went further from God. Makes us think that we should be thankful to one another and not sin in this manner to each other. But became vain in their imaginations. If you've ever read any of their mythologies, I've read a little bit, and it's not profitable. But their mythologies are vain imaginations. And their foolish heart was darkened. Professing themselves to be wise, they became fools and changed the glory of God, of the incorruptible God, into the image made like unto corruptible man and birds and four-footed beasts and creeping things. Nobody knows how many gods the ancient Egyptians worshipped. And it was reputed in ancient times that even the Egyptians didn't know how many gods they worshipped. The Egyptians were plagued with lice, and that's why they always shaved their heads and their body hair. So, you know, they worshipped a god, a louse god. You can't get much more degraded than that. They changed the glory of God and of the incorruptible God into an image like unto corruptible man. Oh, the beautiful statue of Jupiter that was in the temple in Colossae. Oh, the beautiful statue of Athena. Those are some of the less revolting statues that man has made and in that area. But they changed the glory of God, incorruptible God, into an image made like unto corruptible man, to birds, to four-footed beasts, and to creeping things. I mentioned the Navajos, and they're a good example of people with these kinds of things to worship, as are all the other American Indian tribes who want their cultures preserved. Wherefore God also gave them up to uncleanness. God gave them up. He let them go their way. And we just can look at the history of the world and the condition of the world today and see the result. For God gave them up. He gave them up to uncleanness through the lusts of their own hearts, to dishonor their own bodies between themselves, who changed the truth of God into a lie. And we go on and read what is the most accurate description of homosexuality there is, and there is no other way of describing it. And it is certain the Bible is against it, in spite of all of the propaganda by Christ-rejecting people in our own country today. For God gave them up to vile affections. And even their women did not change the natural use into that which is against nature. Likewise, the men, and as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, here's the second time God gave them over to a reprobate mind to do those things which are not convenient. The worst punishment God can give to mankind is this: to let them go their own way unimpeded. This is solemn for us too. If a Christian is utterly disobedient against God, will not conform to the known will of God, the worst judgment God can give such a person is to let him go his own way. And it will always result in disaster, in physical, in emotional, in mental. So God gave them up since they didn't want to retain God in their knowledge. They had better sciences than what they were given by God. And being filled with all unrighteousness, fornication, wickedness, covetousness, maliciousness, full of envy, murder, debate, deceit, malignity, whisperers, backbiters, haters of God, despiteful, proud, boasters, inventors of evil things, disobedient to parents, without understanding, covenant breakers, without natural affection, implacable, unmerciful. Did you count all of those? That's a pretty potent list. I want to call your attention to at least one thing here. Brother Franklin, in his synthesis class, whenever he came to this passage, he would say, I just read it here. He'd say, men are disobedient to parents. He didn't say children. Men are disobedient to parents, rejecting all of the wisdom of anyone over 30. Wasn't that it? Don't trust anyone over 30. But it's surprising how fast those same people grew past 30. Men are disobedient to parents. And this is it's a rather amazing list here. But it is the end of the line for sin's downward path. And these things taken together, are they not descriptive of much of society in our own city of Denver here? We always have a mission at home, don't we, Brother Crook? Not just overseas. Who, knowing the judgment of God, that they which commit such things are worthy of death, not only do the same, but have pleasure in them that do them. They know better, but they just don't care. But let's don't end this on such a note as this. Let's go back track to the 17th verse. For therein, in the gospel of Christ, is the righteousness of God revealed from faith to faith. It begins in faith and yield proceeds to a life of faith. As it is written, the just shall live by faith.